you be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Gamble versus Jack William Chevrolet.
May it please the court, Mr. Thomas McElroy will have an argument for the petitioner. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes.
May it court, please. It's a great privilege to appear before this court. An earlier attorney today spoke of Adam and God, and I recall that many years ago a mistake was made that not even God can change the past, and yet we know that history can change the past, and we know that members of this Supreme Court can change the past. And indeed, that's why we're here today, to consider whether or not there had been error committed by a trial court in Weatherford, which would call upon this court to change the past and to correct that error. This case involves the Daubert Supreme Court of the United States case, the Robinson case decided by this court, two very highly debated and much discussed cases that appear in so many CLEs at this particular time. In this case, we're concerned with whether or not there was an abuse of discretion by the trial court, whether he followed guiding principles of law. We're concerned with Rule 702, or the rule of evidence in Texas. And we get down to our particular case, where our theory is that there was a premature release of the buckle in the seatbelt system of this car, which enabled the rear seat passenger to be freed during the accident and her body then to go forward with her head striking the back of her mother's driver's seat. In support of that theory, which has had much written about it and has appeared in other cases, we have presented two experts, Dr. Ronald Houston and David Lauer, both men well qualified by education and by practice, and indeed probably Dr. Houston is well qualified in the field of biomechanics, the movements of an occupant within a vehicle, systems for protection of occupants within a vehicle, as probably any person in the United States.
Would you classify his testimony by affidavit as scientific?
I think his testimony as shown in his affidavit is scientific. And it also, I believe, it shows what he has known over all these years. Now, surely scientific.
But based on science.
Yes, sir.
What was the issue that Mr. Houston was being asked to address in the case, to offer opinions on?
He was asked to discuss the integrity of the restraint system.
Do you disagree with the Court of Appeals decision when it characterizes the opinions he was going to offer as being as to the cause of death and the condition of the child's body?
Well, the autopsy report establishes the cause of death. Dr. Houston, of course, being a biomechanical engineer, cannot give the opinion as to the cause of death himself, but he is giving his opinion as to what produced the injuries that would have led to the cause.
I understand. I'm just trying to clarify. It seems to me that in looking at Rule 702 and applying the test under 702 as to whether or not an expert would be allowed to testify, one of the first issues needs to be what opinion is the expert going to be asked surrender. And it looks like to me from the Court of Appeals decision that the opinions related specifically to cause of death and the condition of the body as opposed to anything to do with the operation of the seatbelt. So do you disagree with the Court of Appeals?
Well, I certainly do if that's what they are limiting his testimony to.
And does the record in the trial court reflect from the hearing that was held on the Robinson matters that the issues did involve the operation of the seatbelt as opposed to cause of death and condition of the body?
Absolutely. In both his affidavit and in his courtroom testimony, where he is brought down to Cincinnati to talk about how it would be desirable for a testing of the vehicle and the seatbelt assembly.
All right. would you agree that it was outside of Dr. Houston's area of expertise to offer an opinion about the condition of the body or the cause of death?
I do not believe it's outside his area of expertise to talk about the condition of the body, which are so sad and can be seen by anybody by looking at the color photos of the autopsy report. But I do agree that a medical doctor would normally be the one, or someone else, to speak of the cause of death.
So it was not within his area of expertise to offer opinions on the cause of death?
I don't think so.
Okay. And what was Mr. Lowry's issue?
He gave some help on the seatbelt issue, and then
was that what he was being asked to opine about in this case? The way the seatbelt mechanism worked.
Yes, but also he was engaged to consider the matter of the stuck accelerator, and he gave an affidavit with a color photo, part of the record in this case, which shows how he thinks that Myler shrouding could have impeded the operation of the foot pedal arm and caused it to be stuck once applied, and how that in later models they have moved that Myler shrouding over 1/2 inch. And I will say that this side bucking system of the seat belt had gone out of use in most vehicles by the time of this model, a 1988 model. The button's on top now, and in fact the button was on top, it's called an end push button, in the front seat of this very vehicle, and it should have been that way in the back seat.
The trial court conducted a Robinson versus DuPont pretrial hearing to determine the reliability of the opinions being offered by both of these gentlemen, correct?
Yes, there was an
What was it proper for the trial court to apply the Robinson test and hold such a hearing with respect to these two experts?
Well, I think so. In other words, I think that this case can fit neatly and comfortably within the Robinson principles. The Robinson doesn't have to be changed. I have made some suggestions in my brief that point to some other considerations, but I don't see why Robinson can't hold. At the same time, I do believe that just look at the four color drawings and photographs that we have of the seatbelt assembly in our brief. And I think what's immediately apparent, if one looks at them, is that these photographs indicate that the seatbelt assembly does not involve, to use a cliche, and I hate to use it, rocket science, you know. It doesn't involve great novel ideas. But at the same time, I think these photographs indicate that a jury called upon to decide fact issues in this case would appreciate some additional information and expertise about how the system worked. A jury wouldn't know what a retractor is or how it locks. A jury has never heard of a pendulum in a retractor. A jury doesn't know anything about anchorage points. A jury doesn't even know that the seat belt that is around an occupant is normally described as a webbing. Jury knows none of these things. And it would be helpful for a jury to know how the system works if a jury is going to be called upon to determine whether or not there is a design defect in that system, as we believe there is. And Dr. Houston gave five reasons based on the body photo show that Jamie's body had bruises across the chest. The photo showed that her shirt had markings that could have been made by the seat belt. The seat belt itself had marks in it and it had fibers in it. And the whole location of the seat belt for her in this vehicle showed the buckle too close to her hip. The design defects would be the flow through loop, which allowed not enough tension to build up or loading to build up between the occupant and the belt, would have been the push button side release of the buckle, and would have been where that buckle was placed in this vehicle to allow the occupant to be released during the accident and just at the time when the buckle would be most reliable.
It is crucial that to the plaintiff's case that Jamie had her seatbelt on at the time.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And Mr. Lowry did not testify on that subject, as I recall.
I don't know that he did.
But Mr. Houston did.
Dr. Professor Houston did, I'm sure.
Extensively. Did anyone else testify in connection with the summary judgment about whether the child in the back seat, Jamie, had her seatbelt on? Do you know?
No, and I do want to just state this. It's, I'm not quite sure where it would appear in the record, but the mother who was driving had her head smashed into the windshield, and she developed amnesia, never able to testify as to just what the sequence of events was, and therefore was unable to testify as to whether her daughter Jamie was wearing that seatbelt or not.
It puzzled me that there was no statement from the mother in the summary judgment record.
Yes,
that's
the explanation. I think it's not amiss for me to say that she took a true serum afterwards to try to find out what had happened. It's not admissible because of what was taken under oath, no other attorneys present for cross-examination. And it, I think, was generally favorable to the plaintiff, but it didn't cover enough points. And so we don't really have from anybody in the vehicle whether or not Jamie was felt. That's why we think the statements by Dr. Houston are so important in that regard. He believes that Jamie could not have had the marks on her body in the autopsy report unless it had been made by the seatbelt. He believes that the seatbelt itself wouldn't have had marks on it unless the occupant there had been wearing it. He believes that, for the reasons I've stated in the brief, that the autopsy pictures themselves show that the seatbelt must have been in use prior to releasing Jamie. And then he points out, and I think it's very significant in the light of his training, biomechanics, that if Jamie had not been wearing the seatbelt at all, she would almost surely have been thrown forward with great force and speed between the two seats in front, probably hitting the windshield or the dashboard at the very least, but certainly not having her head strike low down in the low back portion of her mother's front driver's seat. And I will say that is the sort of thing that Dr. Houston is eminently qualified to talk about, the kinematics, the occupant movements, the system that might have protected an occupant from either being ejected or not ejected, we'll say, in some types of cases. And it would be a matter that he has written about in many, many articles. So we believe that those are the important parts of the brief with respect to our prime theory of the inertial release, it's often called, the premature release of the seatbelt. We have some other points in the brief, and they relate to our desire for testing that we think was not given us. We were allowed to look at the vehicle and the photograph, but not to take the seatbelt out and make tests upon it, not to take the Mylar shrouding out and make tests with respect to the accelerator. And we believe that there are other points as well that would have been helpful to us if we'd been able to go into them more fully at the trial court. Thank you, Chief.
Any other questions? I want you to comment about on the CA's analysis of this case. The CA concluded that all of the testimony of Dr. Huston, there was no basis for it in fact. There was no, according to the opinion, he said Dr. Huston conducted a test to, we find nothing in the record to indicate that Dr. Huston conducted tests to exclude other possible causes. His theories, or his theories have been tested, and all of the things that we said, and Havner, and Daubert, and Robinson, that the court took into consideration. The court of appeals says that is not in this record. So there's no basis for the scientific for the opinion by these experts.
Well, I think, Your Honor, some of them are in the opinion and in the record, and then some may not be because of the very obvious nature. In other words, some of these matters, I don't think require a restatement of elementary physics and engineering. And so those matters weren't largely developed. But he certainly did comment, I think, with regard to how the seed bed would have been prematurely released in this case.
Any other questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from response.
May I please report? Your name is Maxwell. We'll present argument for the response.
Good morning, and may it please the court. This is a case that has been going on since July the 5th, 1988. That's the date of the accident. This is a one-vehicle accident that involves an Isuzu Trooper. The driver of the vehicle is the mother, Deborah Gamble. In the vehicle, she had her two children. Curtis, who was about 2.5 years old, he was in the front seat. He was restrained with a 3-point restraint system, and contrary to what plaintiffs have stated in their brief to this court, was not severely injured. In the back seat was the 10-year-old daughter, Jamie, and she died. What is not spoken about and referred to in any detail by the Fort Worth Court of Appeals, because it was Dr. Harry Smith's affidavit supporting the defendant's motion for summary judgment in this case, Dr. Smith, in his affidavit, recites at great length his experience and credentials. He is a board-certified radiologist. He is a board-certified emergency room physician. He's been a long time practicing medical doctor and also has a PhD in engineering, and did opine in his affidavit without argument or rebuttal by plaintiff that, first of all, Jamie was not belted. Second of all, that Jamie was thrown between the two seats, and that the injury to her leg was caused as she struck her brother's seat sitting in the right passenger seat, and that she died because she struck the front windshield that simply broke her neck, and when she was taken to the hospital, she did not revive with emergency trauma procedures.
But if the plaintiff's experts are allowed to testify, all that means that the issue has been joined, and there's a fact issue, and that matter cannot be resolved by summary judgment.
No, I would disagree with you.
You say that as a matter of law?
I'm saying that I was trying to make it clear here from a question that Justice Heck asked when he asked if there was any testimony about whether she was restrained or not. We do know that the mother has no memory of the accident. But I wanted to make clear that there was a qualified medical doctor who would be permitted to give opinions in this case that has an opinion that, first of all, she was not restrained because he examined the vehicle a number of times, all of the autopsy photographs, the autopsy report itself, and because of his experience as a board-certified radiologist, looking at all of the x-rays and the medical records, determined how she died, that is, she struck the windshield. There is no fact issue joined because Judge Mullen, the same trial judge was the trial judge in Robinson, determined that neither Dr. Houston nor Mr. Lowry were qualified as experts in this case. He then ruled that they were disqualified and struck their affidavits. There is no fact issue in this case, if the court please, because there is no controverting affidavits on the part of the plaintiff that presently exists.
I understand how a medical doctor can say she broke her neck, she broke her leg, these are her injuries. Why is a medical doctor any more qualified to testify about what she hit in a car or how her body would have responded in an accident than someone who's an expert in biomechanics, and who is an expert in what happens to people in accidents?
Well, I think you have the same problem that you had with Dr. Whitman in the Robinson case, and that is simply because Dr. Houston says he is qualified doesn't mean he's qualified. Simply because Mr. McElroy comes today and tells you that he is an eminent expert in biomechanics doesn't mean he is an eminent expert in biomechanics. Because if you look carefully at what he said in the October 6th hearing, which is part of the trial transcript that the Court of Appeals in Houston looked at, you will find that he doesn't have any real opinions, and he doesn't tell Judge Mullen exactly how he arrives at any of his opinions. So
I thought he said that he saw a dent in the back of the seat and there was blood on it. And that based on his opinion about where she hit the seat, low down as opposed to higher up, based on that evidence, it was his opinion that she had a seatbelt on at the time of the crash.
But he doesn't find any loading on the seatbelt. He doesn't. The fibers that he talks about are not identified as to the source of the fibers. He looks at only two of about 18 autopsy photographs. The medical examiner's opinion was she was not restrained, and the cause of death was she broke her neck. And as far as his opinion that he saw blood, he doesn't say that in his affidavit, and he doesn't say it in the October 6th hearing.
The question is, how is a medical doctor, a qualified person, about the neck breaking as a result of windshield as opposed to a biomechanic, the neck breaking as a result of hitting the back of the seat?
But what is a biomechanic any more than a self-anointed person who has a PhD in mechanical engineer who hasn't taken any anatomy courses, according to his testimony and his deposition? So he's not a biomechanic. Dr. Smith is a biomechanic and a kinemechanic expert, I would say. But I would say that I think maybe I'm not answering the question. If Judge Mullen had found that Dr. Houston had the credentials, had taken the courses, had properly looked at all of the evidence in the case, and was satisfied, one, he was qualified, and two, he had looked at it with the proper methodology and the proper science to come to his conclusions, and his conclusions were relevant and reliable, and then he passed muster under 403, then he would have permitted him to testify, but he didn't.
Do you think there's...
Mr. Maxwell, what was at issue with your motion to disqualify? The qualifications of these two gentlemen to offer opinions on the issues that had been identified by the plaintiffs, or the reliability of the opinions that they wanted to offer? What was the subject of your motion to disqualify?
It was both.
So both of those are grim. And specifically in the order, what was the basis for the trial court's decision, or did the trial court say?
The trial court did not have findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Well, I understand, but did the court order just do a broad form order saying motion granted, or did it say, as I believe the briefs reflect, that the opinions were not reliable?
The trial court determined that the opinions were not reliable, they were not relevant, and determined specifically that Mr. Lowry was not qualified, and I believe also determined that Dr. Houston was not qualified.
Now, the Court of Appeals did a Robinson analysis as opposed to a qualifications analysis with respect to the experience and expertise of the witness to testify on a particular issue.
I understand
qualifications are discussed
but
the basis is Robinson.
Well, yes. And more particularly, what the Court of Appeals did is, as to Mr. Lowry, looked at Mr. Lowry's qualifications and found, as did Judge Mullen, that Mr. Lowry wasn't qualified, and then went on to find that his opinions were not relevant or reliable. I don't agree with the one part of the opinion of the Court of Appeals when it said we did not contest Dr. Houston's qualifications. We did. It was in our motion. The judge heard testimony on that issue as well. And that's part of the Judge Mullen's order.
Then are you really here today primarily looking at the fact that the qualifications of these two men were not established? Is that your first argument, that they shouldn't have been stricken because or their opinion should have been stricken because they were not qualified to render them?
Yes. And I know that when you read cases, when you read Robinson, when you read Havner, when you read Watkins versus Telsmith, the most recent Fifth Circuit decision, when you read the Hartman case, which is the most recent Court of Criminal Appeals decision on this issue of gatekeeping, that it becomes somewhat difficult to make a distinction. Is the trial judge looking at qualifications, meaning and including relevancy and reliability, or are they looking at, do they have an MD, a PhD, did they take anatomy courses, you know, what did they do to even qualify them to give an opinion, and are they basically then only for litigation, or do they conduct research and have other fields of interest?
And it's your view that Robinson applies in a case like this?
It is my view that Robinson applies. I absolutely do not agree with the Compton decision. Interestingly enough, and it's in our brief to the Court of Appeals, and we didn't put it in your brief simply because I don't think it applies. Duffy versus Murray came out about 4 months later, where the Tenth Circuit says federal judge can apply Daubert, and that's a bicycle case looking at an accident reconstruction expert.
So it's your view that it does not require, that novel scientific evidence is not the only circumstance in which Robinson would apply?
It's absolutely my view, and I believe that the court across the hall, the Court of Criminal Appeals, has said so in Hartman.
All right. Then you had recited what Dr. Smith did and the basis for his opinions as to the cause of death.
Yes.
And as I recall, that was a review of medical records, vehicle inspection, his knowledge and expertise, basically complete, his observations.
Right, complete examination of all the restraint systems in the vehicle, the vehicle itself, the damage to the vehicle itself.
Right. And those are appropriate bases for expert opinions under Robinson.
Now that question is extremely interesting because yes is the answer. You're asking me a question because certainly I was a proponent of Dr. Smith's affidavit, which was never put into contest in this case, which I think is also important to step back and reflect that Robinson is correct in that the proponent of the expert has the duty to establish that the proponent is qualified, which Mr. McElroy, on behalf of the Gamels, did not do, as to Dr. Houston or to Mr. Lowry. And if I could just finish this thought, please. Judge Mullen started on October the 13th, 1995, in a hearing that is in the trial transcript that is before this court, being concerned and telling Mr. McElroy, I am very concerned about qualifications that your experts have, that is Dr. Houston and Mr. Lowry, because the plaintiffs have then said we're not going to call the other eight experts that we've listed in this case. He starts warning them then. He conducts, and we had filed a motion to disqualify them between the 8th of September and the 13th of that hearing. He then conducts the hearing on October the 6th, gives them another vehicle inspection on October the 7th, and in the hearing on October the 6th, warns the plaintiffs that he's very concerned about of Dr. Houston and Mr. Lowry. And that's the reason I assume that it's in the order of the court where he makes a footnote and says that he was specifically concerned about it. At no time then, after these at least two warnings from Judge Mullen, does the plaintiff come back and ask for a further hearing to establish the qualifications and the admissibility by relevancy and reliability under 702 of Dr. Houston and Mr. Lowry? He doesn't do it. When the hearing then goes forward to not only disqualify them, but strike their two affidavits at the summary judgment hearing, which followed in the course of this case, and it's not in the record, two mediation efforts plus the court's effort to settle this case. Following all that, the plaintiff
didn't file a motion. We want to have a second hearing or a further hearing that Your Honor offers us to put forward more testimony from Dr. Huseman and Dr. Lowry. That doesn't happen. And so it concludes with Judge Mullen ordering as he did and finding as he did that they, neither one were qualified, and so we disqualified them and struck their affidavits.
Well, let me follow up on this a little bit. In connection, I know that no objection was made to Dr. Smith, so you were not put to a burden under Robinson.
Yes.
Right. However, you did rely on Dr. Smith's affidavit in support of your motion for summary judgment. What you have described the basis for Dr. Smith's opinions and his qualifications. Had a Robinson challenge been made,
yes.
Is what is in his affidavit sufficient under Robinson to show the reliability and admissibility of those opinions? Because as I understand it, there's not anything in there about whether the literature accepts what he's doing or anything else. It's based on, frankly, his observations and experience as a physician. And is that enough under Robinson to prove the reliability of those opinions?
It seems to me the question you're asking is to create a higher standard for affidavits and product liability cases for summary judgment because if...
No, I'm just trying to understand the reach of Robinson.
I think the reach of Robinson is this, Your Honor. I think that if the plaintiff had challenged Dr. Smith's affidavit, then I would have done what I had already done in this case when we were having the issue of inspection. I would have had Dr. Smith in the courtroom, which I did have. I would have put him on the stand, and I would have demonstrated to Judge Mullen that he met all the Robinson criteria.
So you would have done more than what is in his affidavit had he been challenged in order to comply with Robinson.
Right, and what I'm concerned with.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand the standard.
Yes, is the answer to the question, and I would have done exactly what I just described, yes.
So, as I understand the basis for Dr. Houston's opinions, he said he did an investigation, he did document inspection, a vehicle inspection, and he based it on his knowledge and experience.
He looked at 2 of 18 autopsy photographs. He could find no loading on the rear seat belt that Jamie was in, but he still speculated that she was in it.
Under your interpretation of Robinson, then, inspection of documents, vehicle, accident scene, whatever it may be, can never meet the Robinson standard. Additional work is required, or could that, under some circumstances, if it is done adequately, look at all the pictures, inspect the vehicle, and so on and so forth, could that be sufficient to meet the Robinson requirement?
Yes, if you are a medical doctor and qualify, contrary to what the court held in the Borders decision, that is, that emergency room doctor, simply being an ER doctor doesn't qualify. I have a real problem with Dr. Houston having any qualifications to speak about what happened. So I don't think Dr. Houston would ever be permitted to testify in a case such as this because he doesn't show that he's had anatomy courses or that he has had enough medical training to really make him the proper scientist to then give an opinion. And in this case, he didn't even come close to supporting the basis for his opinion. So you don't just have somebody who is called an expert and they go out and they look at the accident scene and they look at the vehicle and they look at photographs and they look at documents and say, now I'm ready to give an opinion. And if challenged, the trial court then has a duty under Robinson, acting as a gatekeeper, to go through and find out what documents did they look at and what opinions did they have as those documents and what is the science that they're basing their opinions on, that simply because I say I'm an expert and therefore my opinion can go to the jury.
What is it about taking anatomy that makes only a medical doctor qualified to say the neck was broken by hitting the windshield instead of the back of the seat?
Well, first of all, in all respect, I don't think a layperson necessarily knows whether it is a compressional fracture or an extensional fracture, and what part of the neck has to be broken to stop all the respiratory functions, and therefore death ensues. I don't think a layperson knows that. And I don't think the person knows it without at least, at a minimum, taking a basic anatomy course.
But the doctor says that there's no mistake. Her neck was broken. She died from a broken neck.
Right.
Now, taking it beyond that.
Well,
what is it about an anatomy course that makes the doctor more qualified than an engineer or someone else to say, she broke her neck when she hit the windshield and not when she hit the back of the seat? She didn't hit the back of the seat, I can tell, because of what? What is it about anatomy course that makes only a doctor qualified to say that?
I don't think it's just exclusively an anatomy course. I think it's the study of medicine, and I think the court has already said in the Borders case that simply because you have a board-certified emergency room doctor, that doctor is not necessarily qualified to give causation testimony in respect to the particular young woman who later died from assault to her. So it isn't just an anatomy course. So I'll be very frank with you. I don't see how Dr. Lowry, who has a PhD in mechanical engineering, could ever give any opinions about what happened in respect to the body. And simply because he's written articles, so had Dr.
What about Dr. Keith?
I'm sorry, Dr. I got excited and I misspoke. I'm speaking about Dr. Houston, not Mr. Lowry. Because Dr. Whitcomb, in the Robinson case, had written plenty of articles, but that didn't mean that this court agreed that he was an expert, or that this court determined that Judge Mullen, the same judge we have in this case, abused his discretion. So it isn't just an anatomy course. I don't think Dr. Houston would ever qualify to give testimony about what was happening to a person inside a vehicle. He may say that he's a biomechanic, but I don't believe it.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, I'm very surprised that counsel would make such a remark if he just made. Dr. Houston has written hundreds of papers such as these, reported in the SAE, effective restraining belts, and preventing vehicle oxygen steering system impact, analysis of locking dynamics of window seat comfort retractors and pre-point automobile seat belts.
Does the record reflect where those were published or where those were?
The record, Your Honor, in his affidavit lists the various articles in his circumvita that he has written and where they were published. Here's another one, a vehicle hydrogen crash victim simulation model. And in each of these, he not only has formulas, but he has drawings such as I have in my brief.
The issue in this case, Mr. McElroy, as I understand it, is not whether or not what is being argued about by the experts is whether or not you can demonstrate that the seatbelt was being used and during the accident somehow released. And the crux of what Houston is testifying to and what's being objected to is, I have seen evidence from the accident site that demonstrates that Jamie was restrained by seatbelt at least during some portion of the collision. He's not really being used to testify that I've looked at the buckle and there's indications on the buckle that it broke during this deal, or there was the way it was designed at all is that this design somehow came loose. But your case really is, I've looked at the autopsy, I've looked at the vehicle, and I can tell from observing that Jamie, was restrained at some point during the collision, and the seatbelt came loose. And beyond that, he might be speculating as how it might have come loose, but that's not the crux of his testimony that you're relying on.
Well, that may be right, Your Honor. He does rely strongly on the severe indentation in the back of the driver's seat, which he believes could have occurred no other way. medicine for Jamie's head, which produced her death, to hit struck it there. This idea that Jamie was thrown forward to hit the windshield appears in Dr. Manning's affidavit, and just as has been suggested here, that would create a fact issue, and we believe it's no answer to say, well, you can't consider Dr. Houston because the judge struck his affidavit. Well, what we're talking about here also is whether or not that would be error to strike his affidavit. But Dr. Houston does more than just talk about the matters that Your Honor's referred to. He does pick up the seatbelt assembly and the restraint system and point out the defects in it if he believes they exist. We would point out further that Jamie's neck, as we remember, was not so broken, and she actually died from head injuries. I would like further to say with respect to Robinson, as we know, Robinson arose out of an effort by this court to put an end to so much reliance on junk science. That was the terminology used. And the court went on to show how experts can be called upon into the most far-out type of situations to testify and to influence juries, and the court considered it gone too far. Now, it's really for this court to determine the reach of Robinson. I think it's an important question, not necessarily fundamental to this case, because I think we're comfortable even within Robinson, but I think surely Robinson should not strike the very fundamental kind of science involved in this case. Engineering, nuts and bolts types, as shown by the drawings. Not very heavy signs there.
So you would, in this case, the trial judge would still have to determine that the expert was qualified in the field.
I think so, even under Rule 702.
But would not then look at whether or not, that once you decided that, since this is not novel science, you would not have the trial judge try to make some preliminary determination of whether that expert's conclusions were within the mainstream of the business.
I think that's right, Your Honor. He could think that what Dr. Houston is saying is outlandish, but it still ought to be admitted into it.
So you
as long as he thinks
so. So there's not really a Robinson hearing here. You don't think there should have been.
Personally, I don't think there's a Robinson hearing. But I think
the reason for us to write in this case is not to try to review every determination that's made of every expert in the state one by one, but it's to try to give some parameters to the bench and bar about the scope of these hearings. So your earlier answer to Justice Hankins about Robinson was fine here is really not what you're saying in the brief, and it's really not what you're saying today.
I think the court's correct. I don't think that most of the suggestions that I made there at the end of five suggestions have a great deal of merit now. It would be easier and simpler just to say that probably Robinson isn't reached in a case involving such basic, not novel, not junk science as involved in this case.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the third cause. We will take